This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order Friday to rebrand the Department of Defense as the Department of War, a throwback to the department's original name used from 1789 to 1947. The symbolic rebranding goes in contrast with Trump's repeated claims to be an anti-war president who campaigned on promises to end conflicts and avoid new wars. Trump has even courted many allied leaders, making the case that he more than any other world leader deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, the rebranding, the message it sends and the message it doesn't send, and other contradictions involved, we'll try to cover in our Spotlight program. But first, this report from the U.S. Capitol.
Executive order, you will authorize...
Billionaire businessman turned politician Donald Trump has rebranded the Department of Defense to the Department of War, in a move which many say lays bare the belligerent nature of the nation's military branch. President Trump says that's entirely the point.
In 1789, the Department of War was created, but it was renamed to the Department of Defense in 1947. Trump effectively said that the name change could erase the stigma of America's losing military record since World War II.
We won World War I, we won World War II, we won everything before, and as I said, we won everything in between. And we were very strong, but we never fought to win. We just didn't fight to win. We didn't lose anything, but we didn't fight to win. We could have won every one of those wars quickly, but they went a route that I think was probably politically correct, but not correct for our nation. So I think the Department of War sends a signal.
There has been widespread criticism that the name change portrays the United States as warmongering and as a perpetual threat to international stability. Some veterans turned political activists agree that the change is nothing if not more honest.
It's honest, at least, of the direction that Trump wants to take our military in and use it as a force for destruction, even more so than it has in the past. So I appreciate the Trump administration's honesty in this one instance. And I just would hope that more Americans start to see what exactly Trump wants to use this military for and stand up and push back against that.
Well, they say it's because the military should be focused on lethality and things like that and offensive actions and things like that. But that's always what the U.S. military has been, right? So it's kind of accurate, right? And when has the Department of Defense been for defense of this nation? Like, when you think back of the conflicts, it's usually us projecting our power forward in places that I personally think we shouldn't be.
Critics have focused on the cost the rebranding will likely create, but it seems there's always money for the U.S. military. If the United States Department of War was a nation, its $850 billion annual budget would make it the 20th largest economy in the world. Some conservative congresspeople said they hoped the name change would lead to spending, quote, substantially more on our military, while many Democrats said the action underscores the falseness of Trump's often anti-war campaign promises. Ramin Mazahari, Washington, D.C.
And now for our guests. Joining us, Dr. Wilmer Leon, political scientist from Washington, D.C. in the States. And Mr. John Bostinus, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Fredericton, Canada. Gentlemen, pleasure to have you both on the program here. I guess Dr. Wilmer Leon, we'll start with you, sir. Good to see you and speak to you after quite some time. It's been where I've checked in with you. So what happened, sir? Trump was supposed to be different than the Iraq and Afghanistan invader and occupier. He helps attack Iran. He's attacked Yemen. He's helped the most extreme voices in Israel ditch peace efforts and possible a ceasefire to continue to fund full-blown genocide and possible even colonization of Gaza. How do you process this rebranding now of his Defense Department?
Well, this is really just a reflection of the difference between fact and fiction. Donald Trump loves to talk in fiction, and what we see here are facts. He claims to be desperately searching for a Nobel Prize. He changes the name of the Department of Defense to the Department of War, and then he writes on social media that Chicago, an American city, is about to find out why it's called the Department of War. Well, that violates the Constitution. There are so many contradictions here that it makes your head spin. It doesn't really matter what it's called if the substantive policies that result from it are the same. There's a line from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. That means that the inherent nature or qualities of a thing are not changed by the name that it's given. It won't change the U.S. record in international conflict. The U.S. hasn't won anything since World War II, and without the Soviet Union and China's involvement, we wouldn't have won that. These are the empty gestures of a wild, erratic, demented mind. He wants to be an authoritarian, hence his actions in Los Angeles, in Washington, D.C. Now what he's threatening in Chicago. And they just murdered 11 people off the coast of Venezuela. The record speaks for itself.
And I'm going to actually come back to you in about a second and speak about those 11 people. I'm glad you mentioned that, Dr. Leon. John Bostinus, thank you for your patience. Welcome to the conversation. Same opening question to you, John, if you may. What happened to the peacemaker so-called candidate, the one that claimed endless wars are ruining America and Americans have had enough and deserve better?
Well, I agree with the first commentator today that the name change makes no substantive difference whatsoever in what is being done around the world by the U.S. empire. I think that we would have to hear more from Trump about why he felt it was necessary to change the name. But the key point here is that it looks like Trump is just not going to attempt in any way to operate as business as usual the way it's been ever since World War II. Trump is accusing his opponents of having lied, of having used USAID as a method of overthrowing other governments, of stealing resources, and yet he himself now is attempting to steal Gaza from the Palestinians and to turn it into some kind of a resort. So we're really going to have to wait and see what this means. Is it just some makeup and some appearance posturing? Is it a PR move? Or is Trump actually trying to reshape the government of the United States in a manner which serves his interests, which simply are not clear to us? I'm a political analyst, and I have been for decades, and I have to tell you, it's opaque. What is happening in the White House is opaque. I cannot see through it. And the people who are inside the White House, there are thousands of people who work around the White House and in the White House, they themselves say to me off the record that they don't know why the name change took place. So it's as good a guess yours as mine.
And I'm glad, Dr. Leon, that John mentioned the word opaque, because that's going to bring me to what you mentioned earlier, the 11 people that were killed in that small boat off of Venezuelan waters. That was the rebranding came just a couple of days after that deadly U.S. Navy strike, where those 11 people on that small vessel were killed in international waters near Venezuela, which the military said involved a drug vessel. Now, some legal experts have questioned the legality of that strike under international law. And right after it, we saw seven U.S. warships and one nuclear-powered fast attack submarine basically sent down there to the Caribbean, close to Latin American waters and Venezuela. My question to you, when the number one epidemic, drug epidemic on U.S. soil that Trump has admitted to and mentioned a few times, comes from not cocaine from South America's, but from fentanyl from Mexico, what is he doing off the coast of Venezuela?
He's distracting. He's deflecting. He's distracting. By all standards, that was no drug boat. You don't have 11 people on a drug boat. First of all, that's too many people that can tell the story in terms of the illicit activities, if in fact it is drugs. If for simple math, if you've got 11 people, you only need one to drive the boat. Say they each weigh 180 pounds. That's 1,800 pounds of people that could be replaced by 1,800 pounds of drugs. So if this is a drug boat, they're not very good businessmen. And there are other elements of this. Where's the evidence? Where's the evidence that it was a drug boat? Usually in these types of interdictions, you stop the boat, you board the boat, you inspect the boat. If in fact there are drugs on the boat, you then take the boat, you seize the boat, you arrest the people on it. None of that happened. Why? Because it probably wasn't a drug boat. With his raising the bounty on the head of the democratically elected president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, from the $25 million that Biden put on his head to now $50 million, and sending ships off the coast of Venezuela, this is the Department of War seeking a fight that they hope they can win. They're getting their hind parts whooped in Ukraine. They are not winning in occupied historic Palestine. They didn't win in their attack on Iran. And so they're searching desperately for a win. And if they mess around in the wrong way in Venezuela, that one won't go well either.
And you hit the nail on the head there. I was hoping you get beyond that they're down there for drugs and that they're down there for regime change and possible war with the Venezuelan government. Thank you there, Dr. Leon. And John, so the U.S. has been at war. I don't know if you know the statistics or you heard of it in the past. 93% of its history, U.S. has reported some time ago via both Wikipedia and some historical news sources that it's been at war for 222 years out of the 241 years it's existed. So this rebranding, one can argue, is more accurate assessment than defense that Trump is just pulling off the mask and coming out the closet.
Well, that may be the case. You know, we're going to see very shortly what happens in the wrap-up of all of the conflict in Ukraine. If Trump attempts to play a peacemaker with President Putin of Russia and to draw a line in Ukraine, maybe they will make some kind of a change. But this entire renaming of the Department of Defense as the Department of War is either a good bluff designed to draw attention away from something else, or it's just one of the things on Trump's to-do list from before the election that he said, I'm going to get this done when I'm the president of the United States again. And he's just going through his checklist. How it affects the world, though, I agree also with the comment of the other commentator today that you don't just kill 11 people with a rocket attack or by an air attack. You find out who they are. You arrest them. You see if they actually have any drugs. You give them due process. And once you've done all of that, then you have to take them to trial and presumably find their collaborators, find the people who financed the drug operation, and trace it back to the actual culprits. It's very seldom the people in a drug boat who are the masterminds of the crime. Mm. So I think what we're seeing here is some grandiose posturing, Mar-a-Lago style, and I think that it is going to do very little to convince those of us who thought Trump was going to be the peace president to come to the conclusion that he's anything other than the war president, because he has brought war to the Middle East on a level of casualties and slaughter and genocide that we have never seen before. Mm. A total attack on civilians.
Thank you there, John. And Dr. Wilmer Leone, I'm going to share a quick quote with you from Pete Hegseth, yesterday's Secretary of Defense, today Secretary of War. He sat in the Oval Office and he said this morning, we're going to go on offense, not just defense, maximum lethality, not tepid legality, violent effect, not politically correct. We're going to raise up warriors, not just defenders. So this War Department, Mr. President, just like America, is back. So my question to you, let's get beyond the Department of War label. Let's go back to the Department of Defense. When was the U.S. actually a true, honest defender for even an honest minute in its history?
To my knowledge, I don't know that it ever has been. It's always been an empire. And this is what empires do. And this is what usually brings about the end of the empire, is excessive expansion. And what I think we're seeing here, there is the proverb that says the last kicks of the dying mule are the most dangerous. And so there are, I think, a couple of different approaches to this analysis. One is you can look at it in the historic context of the United States, to which your last question takes us. And the answer is the United States has always been expansive. The United States has always been empirical, has, especially since World War II, has been a hegemon. And the global dynamic is now changing from the unipolar to the multipolar reality. And reality is very important for people to understand. You can also approach this from the psychosis of Donald Trump. Forensic psychiatrist and violence expert Dr. Bandy Lee and a number of her colleagues, other health professionals, 8 years ago issued a dire warning saying that Trump was mentally unfit to remain in the presidency, and in doing so amounts to a public health crisis. Hmm. And what we're seeing now in the global context is a world health crisis. They murdered 11 people a couple of days ago and are saying, what is little Marco Rubio saying? Ah, pish posh. What it matters not that they murdered 11 people.
And 20,000 children in Gaza on top of the 64,000 killed since October 2023. John, this case of both the genocidal Zionist leader Benjamin Netanyahu claims Trump deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson agrees after Trump's controversial deployment of a National Guard to the streets of the U.S. Capitol, saying it resulted in no murders over the past 2 weeks, something that did not stand up to a simple fact check. Now, these are just a few voices among many, agree that Donald Trump deserves to be nominated. Do you agree or disagree? And please explain your choice.
Well, I haven't seen anything that would suggest to me that Donald Trump is deserving of the post of being the world's leading peacemaker. There's no such evidence. His war on the civilians of Gaza completely disproves that. The theatrical renaming of the Department of Defense as the Department of War doesn't give one a good indication of peace is coming. And I think that we are seeing a level of posturing here that is designed on purpose to confuse not just us, the commentators and analysts, but the American public and the designated enemies of America, such as Venezuela, such as Iran, such as Russia, such as China, such as perhaps even India. I think that we are coming to the head here, and I do agree that the old saying from the Bible, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. If America keeps twisting itself into a mega military power and attempts to flex its muscles and to expect the entire world to roll over and play dead, they're going to have another thing coming because the world will unite against this hegemon and it will unite against the flexing of muscles against a planet that's trying to make peaceful progress together.
Yeah, well put. And Dr. Leon, if you could also weigh in on that, more Nobel Peace Prize supporters for Trump, the Armenian prime minister, the Azerbaijani president for helping diffuse tensions there. The Pakistani government said Trump deserves to be nominated for the prize after de-escalating tensions that helped avert all-out war with India. But what did India say? India said Trump had nothing to do with it, and supposedly this has created tensions between Trump and Narendra Modi. Now, he declares the Department of Defense as a Department of War and then gets upset if you don't agree that, as he is to John's point, an apex peacemaker on the planet.
Well, you don't have to be an international expert to understand, or you don't have to be a psychiatrist like Dr. Bandy Lee to understand that you play to Donald Trump's ego, and that can get you into a lot of places and can get you a lot of things. So, you know, listening to some of these world leaders that are echoing this foolishness about he's deserving of a Nobel Prize, again, they're just playing to the ego of a madman. But I don't think to John's point about the flexing of U.S. muscle, and I think John is absolutely right. But I don't think President Putin is concerned about that. I don't think President Xi is quaking in his boots in Beijing about this. I don't think Sergei Lavrov or Wang Yi, the foreign minister of China, I don't think they're concerned about this. I don't think President, your supreme leader, Khamenei, I don't think he's concerned about this because they all and you all have much longer views of history to draw upon and to work from. And what did Dr. King say? The moral arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. So I think the leaders that I've mentioned look at this as merely a blip on the radar screen. And final point, honestly, Donald Trump should have changed the name of the Department of State to the Department of War. Because since Tony Blinken, they have not been able to spell diplomacy, let alone engage in it. They've been more warmongering than the Department of Defense.
Thank you there, Dr. Leon. We only have about a minute left, John. I really need to be quick on this last weigh-in. The message this sends, especially to U.S. allies, who are just basically tired of putting up with policies that have led to so many wars that they've been dragged into, oftentimes against their own will. And now with Ukraine on their borders, and they're also on the precipice of more conflict, possibly in Taiwan, possibly in South America, coupled with Trump's tariff wars that targeted most of them, it seems these decisions are just pushing away America's closest friends.
Well, I do agree that that's the effect, and I actually think that that's the intent. Mm. I think Trump tried to eliminate NATO and to disband the military empire in his first term, and he failed because of the deep state and because of people like Blinken and other people inside the State Department. And now he is going to make it impossible for the European powers to stay allied with America unless they want to pay through the nose and give over the majority of their national budget to turn America into a country of war and not just having a department of war.
Great stuff, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Appreciate having you both on. Thank you sincerely to both of you for joining us. Dr. Wilmer Leon there joining us from the U.S. Capitol. Also, Mr. John Boston is joining us from Fredericton, Canada. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRAB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite, Back to Reality. Yes, once more we are here to bring you back to another reality, which is the concern of today's world, I guess, and it's very prevailing everywhere. And I hope wherever you are, you're doing well and everything is just going so fine with you. So welcome to this episode. This is Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be with you. And with me, I have two very dear guests, Brother Liaqat and Brother Muhammad. Welcome both of you to the studio and assalamu alaikum.
Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum assalam.
So, well, I know you already know how the ritual of this program goes. I would like you to give us a very brief introduction about yourself and about your background. What have you been doing all these years? So let's start with Brother Liaqat.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm from India, Muhammad Liaqat Abbas from India. And I've done my bachelor's in history of Islam. And right now I'm doing my master's in psychology.
Very good. And you?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. My name is Muhammad, and I have studied a lot about the Quran and Islamic studies. While my university degrees are not related to this, I have a bachelor's in English literature and also English language teaching, master's in English language teaching, but I'm mostly interested in topics related to the Quran especially, and also a hadith and anything Islamic, and I've done a lot of research in this field.
So I guess we have a perfect combination in here, psychology and Islamic research, which is going to help us too much to bring things into reality and into the spotlight of reality. Well, you know that sometimes it happens that in many countries, the brains of that country start to pack their bags and then fly away. So the first question that might pop up into your mind is that, is it the failure of that individual person, or no, it's the failure of the system? But before we get into this and study it in depth, we have to define brain drain. How do you define brain drain?
Well, basically, brain drain means that someone who's a brain, means that they're really intelligent, they're smart, they're a genius, and they're educated. They have, like, they know how to do a lot of good stuff. They're experts in many subjects, probably. I don't know. And these people, instead of staying in their own country and serving their own nation and their own people, They think that people are not, you know, well, not the system or people in general. They're not valuing them. They're not recognizing their worth. They're not appreciating them, basically. And so they think that they could have better opportunities in another country if they migrate to another country. It could be like, it could go either way. Like, they might fail miserably, or they could make a lot of progress and also, like, you know, live a really good life and get really rich and be really successful and so on and so forth.
What about you, Brother Liaka? Do you agree?
Yeah.
Is this the definition of brain drain according to you?
Yeah, to some extent, yes, of course. Like, you have to see why the person is moving out from a certain place to a certain place. Just like you have said, it can be to the person, like itself, or it can be the system, like the country is not valuing, or maybe he's seeing that he's getting more opportunities. Mm-hmm. Example, in today's world, if we see everything is through money, yeah? People speak through money normally.
Money
yeah?
speaks.
Money speaks,
money
exactly.
Talks, yeah.
Money totally
so,
speaks.
Yeah, exactly, indeed. This is the reality, yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. So the person looks at the other country offering good bonus, I don't know, like a good opportunity, mm-hmm. good job offers, and he shows his talent over there. And because of this...
recognize it. And
yeah,
that's
exactly.
Why when they go there, they would flourish.
Exactly, yeah. Otherwise, he would think, okay, here I'm going to make maybe like some amount. Instead, if I go over there to that country, abroad, example, I'm gonna make 10 times, example.
So, whom to accuse? But we have to go for a break. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Yeah, maybe I see the world differently, and I think that if I change my direction into another place, then everything is going to be pretty much better. But is it a hallucination? Is it just a balloon of hallucination that needs to be pricked by reality, or no, it's just the reality itself, that if I go, everything is going to change. And this is why we have this episode in today's Back to Reality. Brother Liaqat and Brother Muhammad are with me, and we're dissecting, actually, different details regarding brain drain. So, whom do I have to accuse for this brain drain that is happening? So I have studied in my own country. I feel like I have enough potentials to be more developed or to achieve more. But then I see what I've been through does not go in harmony with what I have right now in my life. That's why I try to change. And maybe that change is going to happen through migration. So is the structures of my country responsible for this, or no? It's just a personal decision.
Mm-hmm. You see, it's you can't say it on a whole extent, on a larger scale. You have to see like case. You have to do case study, I would say, yeah, case by case, person by person.
So it differs from one person to another.
Definitely. You can't give a general ruling or general principle.
Prescription to everyone.
Exactly. So, example, for one person, it might be like, okay, the country is not offering the need required for the individual to flourish over there. So that's the reason the person is going over there, like to the other country, probably. For another person, it can be in this manner, that the person is not doing enough hard work. Maybe he's finding other countries offer more easier to flourish.
Well, I think that, you know, it goes both ways. It's the system and the person is to be mm-hmm. blamed. It's like when something bad happens to someone, it's always first they have to search in themselves and find the problem themselves. But it's also the system. So it could be both. I can't say if it's, you know, like we can't say it's equally the system's fault and the person's fault. I don't know about that. It could be like our brother said, we need to do a case study for that. But the system could not be providing enough facilities and opportunities for that person. And, you know, just like it might be like a very faulty system that in general, it's not very efficient. And people, they don't have enough opportunities usually in that country or that system. But that person is also to be blamed, in my opinion, because that person usually, like Brother Liaghat said, they always prioritize money over everything. You might live a very comfortable life there. You might have a lot of opportunities. You might make a lot of money. But the problem is that your faith is being undermined, is being compromised. You see? So
couldn't you have both? Like, I mean, there would be, there are many.
No, I'm saying, I'm giving an example. Yeah, but some, yeah, like you see, some might say, okay, I'm a really good Muslim. Wherever I go, it doesn't matter. I always be good.
Because,
I,
you know, it can go the other way
in
as
God
well.
And I always, you know, perform my duties and my religious obligations. And yeah, but at the end of the day, when you move away and you go in an environment that is not like compatible with your religion, you're going to be carried away. Okay.
I know.
It's harder sometimes to practice your religion somewhere else.
What if I stay in my own country and then be penniless and then still my faith is
going
to
go through? Well, that's your problem. See, you have to be a good person no matter the situation, no matter the circumstances. If you're poor, you have to be a good person. If you're rich, you have to be a good person. The problem is with you. You can't blame the system. You can't blame this and that. I don't know, like this person and that person.
But the system is not offering me.
See, we have free will. Don't say the system. It's all up to you. Yes, you're free to make any decision you want.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's you yourself that decides what to do.
If you see in history, there were people who had the potential to go to other places or other countries, I would say, and who could have flourished over there, but have preferred to stay in their own country and flourish their country.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even though they had a hard life, even though they had, I would say, a life of poverty, even to some extent, life without money, life filled with hardships. But still they preferred to stay back at their own country and try their best what they can do in order that their country, their own country, gives a kind of progress or shows progress compared to the other countries. And we have seen different examples, different personalities in this regard.
You know what the question is? I mean, how much realistic this is going to be? Because I'm only one person. If I decide to help my country, it's only me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to do much neither to my country and neither to my, nor
why
to
not?
Myself.
If I take examples right now, example, you will be astonished. Like a person can change the whole country or even has a very great impact on other countries.
The problem with those who are actually afflicted with this problem of brain drain and leaving their country to live somewhere else is that their priorities are not correct. Their ideals, they don't have good ideals, in my opinion.
I have to think about myself before being ideal.
They are only thinking about materialistic things, about money, about material success. We shouldn't be like that. Building
a
country, making a country better is not about making it richer all the time. It's about beliefs as well. It's about many things related to religion. The only thing that matters is your faith. The Quran says, "Wal asr, innal a'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wal asr, innal insana lafi khusr illa alladhina amanu wa 'amilus salihat wa tawassaw bil haqqi wa tawassaw bis sabr." What does that mean? It means all human beings are at a loss unless what? They believe in Allah and they do good deeds. And of course, they avoid sins. So I think this whole issue of a person leaving a country because they don't have enough opportunities, they're not making enough money, is way too materialistic. It should be for their religion. This is something the Quran approves.
Okay, that would be another story which we
don't
want to open right now.
They're both about migration, right? When a person we talk about brain drain, we're talking about a migration of a person who is a genius or whatever to another country in order to flourish, like you said. But sometimes a person is in a country where they are not allowed to freely practice their religion. This person is allowed to migrate. That is exactly what happened during the time of our Holy Prophet. A group of people migrated to Abyssinia. Why? Because they were being persecuted. They were not being allowed to practice their religion, their faith. So this whole idea, I'm against this whole idea of brain drain, unless you can't practice your religion.
Yeah, okay. We owe 1 minute to Brother Liaqat because he had an example to share. Mm-hmm. But time is already up.
Okay, so example, if we see Imam Khomeini example, or Gandhi, the famous example, the Indian revolutionist who had a very simple life example. He went to South Africa, you know, for his studies, and he could have stayed over there.
Yeah, it was more like an exile.
Mm-hmm. Before, like he when he was studying, his studies were in South Africa.
Again, Gandhi. The kind of success that these people had were not materialistic, right?
Mm-hmm. Like exactly. Gandhi, like he came back.
Did he become richer?
They came back. Example, they have brought revolution into the country. And I think if a person stays back and he really has tawassul, like he has a strong connection with Allah Subhanahu wa Taala, and asks for help, the help is very
near. He would finally achieve that. And I guess that's mostly the question of how to live honorable. This honor is there. This would make the gist of today's episode. So, like always, we're running out of time, and it was the end of today's episode. I hope you have enjoyed that. Until another episode of Back to Reality. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again. Once again.
Choose to think better. Welcome to A Better You. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
It is one of the most vibrant cities in Iran. For centuries, Qazvin, also known in history as Caspian, has been a melting pot of people and cultures, and also one of the important hubs for trade and commerce in the region due to its special situation on a part of the Silk Road, where merchants brought in commodities from the four corners of the world. And there was a special place for that purpose, a building which is still alive until today.
The Sadr Sultanate Caravanserai was one of the greatest icons of Qazvin city, before it was partly abandoned near the end of the Qajar dynasty. But today the caravanserai is back on its feet once again, thanks to restoration efforts by the municipality. Covering an area of around 35,000 square meters in the heart of the city, Sada Saltana is visited by thousands of people, including tourists, every day. In the early afternoon, just prior to rush hour, a gentle breeze accompanying the tranquil atmosphere becomes the main theme in long passages inside the caravanserai. The combination of bricks, tiles, and wood by dexterous Iranian architects have created breathtaking perspectives and perfect symmetries all across the building. Just close your eyes and imagine the camel bells ringing as they bring in goods from China, India, and Europe to Iran. Here, the biggest roofed caravanserai in the entire Middle East continues to win the admiration of its visitors. Looking at the arcs and the domes covering each corridor, you could feel yourself standing inside a genuine Iranian bazaar. Sada Saltani Caravanserai is a hangout for art lovers more than anything else. A Persian calligraphy class teaches the artistic way of writing to kids. In another corner, courses in wood carving are offered to enthusiasts by the famous master Said Farhadian, who turns wood into magic. In one of the shops, handmade leather products and equestrian gear are offered to clients. Qazvin's antique mats and felt products are also available. If you're after handicrafts, medicinal herbs, and sweet souvenirs, this is the right place to be. Here you can also experience a perfect traditional restaurant and a peaceful Iranian tea house as well. Most of these shops are open since the renovation of the caravanserai a few years ago. However, there are also old-timers who've spent a lifetime here. More than a century ago, architects used all in their power to build this caravanserai as attractive as possible for merchants who arrived here to rest, to trade, and also to transit their goods. Today, the same amount of accuracy has been put into restoring the building so that Sado Saltane could continue to attract people. Harmony is everywhere, from the floor to the ceiling. New brass wall sconces add additional warmth and depth to the caravanserai's interior. A visit to this historical place can keep you entertained for a whole day and create unforgettable moments for everyone. The Sado Saltani Caravanserai is another page in the colorful book of Iran, with memories that could remain in your mind forever. Life is short. Don't forget to visit this beautiful place. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
Persian handicraft is steeped in history and a big part of Persian tradition and culture that has always remained alongside its people even till this day. Persian handicraft has offered countless forms of eye-catching crafts that have left any visitor to this ancient land baffled and bedazzled.
Now, when you come to Tehran's handicraft hub, you're met with amazing artwork and also handicraft work, and you have so much to choose. The interesting thing is that everything here is made out of wood, and I would really love to see how this was made.
Marquetry, which is a form of wood inlay. It is the art and craft of bringing pieces of veneer together to a structure or surface to form decorative patterns, designs, or even portraits, an art many Iranian craftsmen have learned to master.
They're all made out of wood, and they're from different colors of wood, and trust me, it has taken hours, even months, for an artist to sit down and bring all these little pieces together and make it what it is right now, a wonderful piece of art, and it's this art that we call marquetry.
in order to bring together an array of colourful veneer into detailed and delicate shapes and sizes, and produce an astonishing and intricate masterpiece requires determination, hard work, an artistic vision, and lots of skill. Years of practice is a must to master marquetry.
I know that this is quite impressive and very amazing in every way, but it's not just wood inlay that's amazing as well. There's other kinds of inlay artwork. There's also stone inlay and also metal inlay.
However, the craftsmen have not restricted themselves to just using wood or just the technique of marquetry itself. After all, it is a competitive market with customers always wanting high standards and unique works of art.
Now, the art of inlay isn't just about working with wood. You can also use different kinds of materials, and it really depends on the artist or the craftsman and what materials they want to use. They could use, well, different kinds of metals or even different kinds of stone, like turquoise or maybe mosaic. It really depends on the artist and what kind of result they want to produce with it.
Nowadays, craftsmen include other materials, such as turquoise, and different techniques of inlay, such as intarsia, into their works. And sometimes, it is this combination and mixture of different elements that give it a one-of-a-kind finish. So you've seen what masters of marquetry are capable of, and it doesn't stop there. Talented artists of this caliber are seen in all areas of Persian handicraft. And if you don't believe me, then come and see for yourself.
Nowadays, craftsmen and artists, they use different kinds of techniques and different kinds of inlay to produce wonderful works of art. I hope you enjoyed it, because I did. I'll see you next time. Reza Golzadeh for Iran.
Thank you.